Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Another night of Spiritual Connections Radio. As always, I want to thank everybody for the great feedback we've been getting on the radio show and the tons of comments. And, of course, everything you send us, we're always looking to incorporate it into the show. If you want to find out more about our shows and also the fact that not only do we have the shows every Thursday now, but a couple different people are running their own shows, such as my co-host Pam is running her shows on Monday now on the same channel. My friend Brigida and Mike are actually running a show every monthly, the Ascended Masters, and we have, which we'll be announcing soon, we have another 7 radio shows that are going to be launching under the Spiritual Connections channel over the next 2 months. So we're really excited about all the different people that are going to be able to come and teach spiritual topics and everything to all of you. To find out more about what's coming and, you know, what people we have on for interviews on the different shows and everything that's lining up, make sure to check out our website at www.spiritualconnectionsradio.com. And with that said, I'm going to go ahead and introduce Pam. And go ahead, Pam.
Hi, Mark. Hi, everyone listening. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. We're really excited about our program. This evening, our show is, our guest speaker is with a man by the name of Peter Calhoun, and Peter is a Western shaman and a healer, and the author of Soul on Fire and Life Without Limits. And what an experience, what an amazing journey he's had. I really am looking forward to talking to him about it. Peter, are you here with us?
Yes, I am, Van.
Welcome, so... Welcome.
Thank you. I'm great to be here.
I really am so excited about having you.
So am I.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself? You've written 2 books. When did this journey begin for you?
Well, the journey really, I would say the journey had 2 phases. I chose when I was in college to go into the priesthood of the Episcopal Church. It was a struggle, but I felt that I wanted to serve. I wanted to do some good in the world, and this seemed to be the way I had been Episcopalian all my life, not a very good one. And I became more and more disenchanted with the dogmas and doctrines, even though the Episcopal Church is certainly one of the most liberal in Protestantism. But I felt there was so much more that was missing, not being talked about. And in 1971, I had a series of visions and paranormal experiences, you might say, in which I saw my future. And my future was not risk as a priest in the church, but it was to teach people who they really are, that we have powers, soul powers, that we have not awakened, and that we've bought into a false belief system about ourselves. And when we release that belief system that's become the consensus reality of our culture, and change the way we perceive ourselves and our world, then we come into our true divine nature. And I was told that we are beings essentially without limitations. The limitations we have are limitations we've imposed on ourselves, but we're not bound by the laws of the physical plane, for example. and we're so much more than what we think we are. And what I was told is, I was to write about these, I was to teach this, I was to awaken these powers within myself, powers that are often attributed to the Eastern masters and a certain native shaman. But we don't think of them as being someone in the Western culture that has this. So these powers did begin to awaken with a spontaneity after I had made my exodus from the church, and they continue to awaken, and I try to demonstrate these to other people so they can know who they are. So that's a long-winded answer to your question, but it was an important phase in my life.
It's wonderful. Tell me about soul power. You mentioned it. Now, soul power obviously is an awakening, but can you elaborate on that for
us
a little bit?
Oh, yes. And in fact, my book, my new book, you can get through Amazon, Life Without Limits, it talks specifically about my awakening of the soul powers and how any reader can do this also. But these are spiritual powers that we all have, and they are powers that are known in the East, in India and Tibet. But what began to happen is that my first experience was I was told that I had these abilities, and I was asked to go and visit a lady that was dying of cancer. She had two days to live. And this is briefly in the book. And the cancer spread throughout her body, and I just gave her healing when I visited her in the hospital. I'd never met her before. Placed my hands over her head, and I didn't hear from her. So I assumed she died. And it was 6 months later that I heard about this lady that was going all over my hometown, which was Atlanta at the time, telling people about this priest that had healed her of cancer when she was dying. I don't know why she didn't bother to tell me. Maybe she thought I was psychic and knew it anyway. But that's how my journey began, with some pretty miraculous healings. And then one time I was with a group. This was a few years later. We were out in Canyonlands National Park, and people were vision questing. It's a spiritual quest that is patterned after the Native Americans. And we had laid a pyramid of sticks to have a ceremonial fire that night. There were about 18 people present. And we were gathering more wood, and the fire spontaneously combusted. And I knew that somehow I could do this. People, nearly everyone saw it. There was no smoke, and then there was smoke. There'd never been a fire built, in that area. It was a sandy desert floor in those beautiful red rock canyons that some of you may have visited. And so it was the next time that I took a group there, vision questing, 3 years later. We had about 22 people then. And I told them about what had happened. I said, this time I'm going to intend another spontaneous combustion. And I did, and I think most people thought I was joking. And I thought, God, that's pretty arrogant of me to say that. And we had set up a pyramid of sticks, and we're gathering kindling to add to it. We were going to have a Native American sweat lodge that night, and then there was no fire, and then suddenly there was fire. I had actually forgotten that I had intended, set my intention to have the spontaneous combustion. And then we had the combustion in two other places, and that I learned I had the power over fire. I did a number of ceremonies. I've done a number of ceremonies to materialize storms on a clear day when nothing was in sight, to demonstrate this to people that we have these amazing abilities. I know I'm talking a lot, so I'm going to stop and see if there are questions. I could go on and on about how this awakening took place.
Well, Peter, you're our guest, so going on is a good thing. We're interested in what you have to say. It's fascinating. How often do you take people into the desert for the vision quest?
Well, we probably will be taking a group sometime in September. We haven't set the dates yet, but and definitely next spring. So we do this generally in the Canyonlands National Park. Most of the work I do is with 3 and 4 day seminars here in the Sedona area. And we find this is one of the most beautiful and most powerful places in the country. And so we have some amazing, magical things happen. The first time I visited Sedona, it was 92, 91, something like that. And there was Northern Arizona had a 4.5 year drought. There was no rain in sight. And I had an apprentice at that time that was with me, a couple of them, and I asked one of them to come and help me do a ceremony to bring in the rain. I'd never done that before. And we did a ceremony, asked for rain, and as I said, there was none in sight. It was a severe drought. The next day I woke up, this was in mid-February, and the sticks were snapping outside, limbs were breaking off. I had my shades down and I opened them up. There was a foot of snow on the ground, and they got about 5 feet of snow north of us in the mountains north of us, the San Franciscos. It was the storm of the decade, and they had the wettest spring on record. And this kept happening again and again. So that was the power over the storms, over the winds and the fire. And I found that this is very much, it's not in our culture, but it's very much a part of indigenous cultures. And in the Vedic teachings and India, these abilities are well known, and in Tibet. But I couldn't find any frame of reference here in our Western culture. I probably am one of the very few, if the only, Western person that's had this full awakening of these soul powers. Not that anyone can do this. It's just that we don't know who we are, and especially in the West. And so we have forgotten about...
Well, that's kind of... I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No,
that's
it.
I just wanted to talk about what you're mentioning, because you mentioned earlier that we've forgotten who we are, and we have a false belief system. Does that relate to who we are?
That's a main section, and I even go further, and I said that it's not just our ignorance and maybe laziness, but over the ages, there's been an economic and spiritual and political elite that has created this false belief system, and it has resulted in us having a limited view of who we are. And so some of it was a deliberate deception, because there has been this group over the centuries that has wanted to keep us good worker bees to serve the needs of the elite. And so how best do you do that but disempower people with false doctrines and dogmas and make them feel limited and without any power? And so
that's fascinating.
In my book Life Without Limits, I have some chapters on how to detect these limiting beliefs and how to become free of them, because as we become free of them, then that's when our true soul powers open up. These things that I'm talking about might seem incredible to some of my listeners, but I've demonstrated these again and again, and in front of groups of people, and they witness this, and then some of them, after they witness, they find that they can do some of the same things just because their belief system changes.
How do you change beliefs in terms of, is it just a level of awareness once you become aware that you have a limiting belief that you can eliminate?
It's not just changing, you know, saying I'm going to believe this instead of this.
Right.
A lot of people are, you know, going into the area of prosperity. Let's talk about this. We in our culture, there's this One of the false beliefs is that of lack, that lack is a part of our life, nothing that we can do about it. So we don't have enough, depending on the person, we don't have enough love, we don't have enough money, we don't have enough material things, we don't have enough opportunities in the business world. So that is the consciousness of lack. And the feeling is that there's not a lot we can do about it. We're destined. And so we take this. How has this consciousness of lack affected me? And then the way you do it is it's a threefold formula that I give in the book. And do you want me to give this now, or do you want to just wait until it's a way to find out what our limiting beliefs are and how we can neutralize them, how we can transform them in our mind?
I see.
Mm-hmm.
It's the three limiting beliefs. They're in the book, the second book, the new one that you just wrote.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
There's a whole chapter on false beliefs, and then it gives a formula for changing some of these false beliefs. More on the unconscious level, and because they were programmed into us since we were toddlers, and so that is, we have to find the ones that are there in the unconscious as well as the ones that are in the conscious mind, and then we can use this formula, this threefold method, to neutralize these beliefs and be forever free.
I see. Okay, so could you give our listeners, you don't have to reveal the three steps, but could you give us a tip on if we become aware of a limiting belief, how we can help ourselves get through that?
Oh, sure. As a matter of fact, I can give the limiting beliefs. I want as many people to know about this. I can give the formula. It's spelled out more clearly and in detail in the book. Let's say we have this false belief that I just mentioned, one of lack. It could be one of suffering, that we are can expect suffering, one of judgment, that we are judged by some deity out there and we have to be forgiven, or that we're continually judging ourselves. It could be many different types of beliefs. And so we look at that, and we first of all want to visualize, instead of the consciousness of lack, we want to visualize abundance, and visualize abundance coming into our life, a spiritual abundance, emotional abundance, material abundance, and that this is flowing into our life. This is through the imaging, we want to get pictures of it coming into all this abundance, new friends, the love of our life comes in, whatever it is that we are in search of, and then we want to feel it happening, not just imaging it. We feel, what is it like? What is it like if you're seeking love? What is it like to be with the love of your life? Try to get that feeling as best you can. If you are having problems with money, what is it like to have all the money you need and more? It's a pretty good feeling, I'd say. And then, so that's the imaging and the feeling. They're both so important. The feeling gives it the power. The imaging focuses on the target. And then there is the third step, is a higher truth. We want to state or verbalize a higher truth and say, It is my birthright. Birthright is my entitlement to have abundance in my life on every level. So we're stating that higher truth. We're verbalizing the higher truth. We're imaging it, and we're feeling it. And this is how, you know, it may be that we need to do it more than once. These things are hard to let go of, but that is the formula, and we do that with everything. We have this cultural belief that that the earth is ours to take and take and take as we please. And that comes from a false belief that was put in by a ruling patriarchy at a later time, that where God says in the opening chapters of Genesis, you know, go and subdue the earth and have dominion, or in other words, to dominate the beasts of the field, the fowls of the air, and the fishes of the sea, something like that. And so we've been told that even God said to do this. Well, we took this, you have to always ask, what is it that is, who is being served by a belief like this? People that want to, through greed, exploit the earth. So there's a small minority that's being served, and so they're able, without anyone stopping them, to go and clear-cut the forest, to slaughter the buffalo, and to just take and take and take, and not giving back, to cut the old-growth trees. And so that's what we're doing in the rainforest of the Amazon. About 1 acre a minute is being swallowed up and destroyed, and by people clear cutting so they can use the rainforest for land, for ranching. And of course, these are the lungs of the earth. Without these rainforests, we wouldn't have the oxygen. The oxygen content has already dropped, I think, from like 21 to about 17 parts. I don't remember the way of measuring, but there's been a significant drop, and we're losing many species. When any species dies, and there are hundreds, even thousands of species dying every year because of the way we're treating the earth, then a part of us dies. Think about that. A part of us dies whenever some life form dies out there. And we need to think about that, or we're not going to have an earth. That's how a false belief that serves the needs of a few has put us in an 11th hour situation.
Okay. Now, you mentioned false belief systems, and we've been talking about that. And the one that you brought up as an example was the belief system of lack. What are some of the other beliefs, limiting beliefs, that we believe about ourselves that are false?
One is about how you look about your appearance, your physical appearance. This has caused a tremendous hardship on people, especially women. For example, the ideal is that a woman should look at the magazines in the grocery stores, but a woman should look like a scarecrow. She should look anorexic. Look at the anorexic-looking movie stars and rock stars and soap stars, and you'll get an idea of that. That's seen as a virtue. There's no time in history and no culture that has felt that the feminine needs to look anorexic. But who does this serve? That's why we always ask, whom is served by this? If this is the way we are to look, well, people in the fashion industry, people in the weight loss industry, the men that create these things are served by this. And so women, and who is hurt by this? Most women. That for a woman to have 2% body fat is very dangerous. And as I said, there's never been considered beauty when a woman has 2% body fat. But then how does this affect individuals? Most women cannot meet up to those standards. And so they feel bad about themselves. They hate their body. And it just goes on and on. So something that would seem innocuous, the way that we should look, we're told that, as that part of the false belief, and what it's making people rich, So I think you get the idea.
I do.
Okay. Hey, Peter.
So,
yes.
I have a question for you. I noticed from your book you talk a lot about overcoming belief systems and stuff like that. And I guess, you know, with the fact that you've been on this journey and you've been able to work through and be able to do a number of different things spiritually, I was wondering if you could share with us what you feel is one of the biggest challenges you had to overcome as you were on your spiritual journey.
I suppose one of the biggest challenges is that I thought, who me? You know, I was told in one of my visions, and it was a vision like a lucid dream in which I went out of my body, and I was told that I had developed these abilities in a previous life, and I had to remember these previous lives and to remember, in fact, all my past lives, and to be able to awaken the abilities that I'd developed in other lifetimes, that I had had a full awakening in another lifetime, and to demonstrate these to people as abilities that each of us has, that the abilities that we are, and that we truly are beings without limits. And I thought, you know, how can I possibly do this? I had no idea. I thought, you know, who me? And then what happened is these things started awakening with a spontaneity and ease that I never would have believed, I never would have dreamed of. For example, I started remembering my past lives and who I was. And as I said, the healing ability, the ability to spontaneously combust fire. There's some funny stories about that too, by the way. These things just happened with an ease and a spontaneity, which made me feel even more strongly that, yes, they are there within us. When you see something do something like this, when you see something perform a so-called miracle, then let's say a group sees that, one of those persons is going to feel, yes, I can do that too. And then they do. And then, you know, another a person sees them do that. And it goes on and on. It's the ripple effect. And this is what I'm trying to get started, is the ripple effect. It's not just indigenous shaman and medicine people, or the lamas, the East Indian masters. This is us. We have these abilities. This is who we are, and that's why I demonstrated so often with groups these abilities to materialize fire, to materialize a storm on a clear day with no rain in sight, and to call up the winds and stop the winds. And my wife, Astrid, is much younger than I. We've been together about 16 years, and this is the third marriage for both of us. It took a little patience, but we found each other as soulmates. But one time we had a group vision questing in Canyonlands, and when the sun went down and it got dark, we saw this glow up the canyon. Now, a 35-mile-an-hour wind had been blowing, and the glow got much brighter very quickly. We knew there was a fire several miles up the canyon. And then we smelled the smoke, and we felt the ashes, and we knew we had very little time to get out of there. We could have saved ourselves, but we would have lost a lot of expensive property, like tents and sleeping bags and cook stoves and things like that. So Astrid had already, by seeing me, this is what I mean, the ripple effect, had already begun to develop this command over the winds. She could call up or stop the winds. I've seen her do this many times. She could call in the rains and materialize a storm. And so so I asked her to do it. I felt like I demonstrated enough, and she did. She faced up the canyon when the ashes were falling on us, asked the wind spirits to stop blowing and the fire to go out. And it took about 5 minutes before suddenly, you know, the wind came to an amazing stop. It had been blowing, and we'd had a strong wind blowing day and night for 35 miles an hour for 4 days. And she did that in the presence of a number of other anxious adults that were vision questing, and people were absolutely amazed. So this is how it works. And as I said, you see one person doing this, and someone says, oh, I know I can do this too.
Yeah. Peter, we're going to just take a small break, and then I'll return back to you with a follow-up question. So for everybody that's tuned in, you're listening to Spiritual Connections Radio. You can find out more about our radio shows and different types of segments and other people we have on during the month by going to www.spiritualconnectionsradio.com. And with that, Peter, can you tell us how people can find out more about you, your books, where to purchase your books and stuff like that?
Yes. My latest book, it goes into the awakening of these abilities and the visions I had of the limiting ideas and views and that were imposed on us, what I call the greatest deception in the world. That is Life Without Limits. That can be, you can go to my book website, lifewithoutlimits.com, and order it. I'm sorry, Life Without Limits book, that's singular, .com. LifeWithoutLimitsBook.com, or you can call Amazon directly. The earlier book, that's a collection of amazing stories of things like the one I just told, that is found in my first book. Hey, it's published by Hay House, and that's Soul on Fire. That's the name of that book.
Now, I know that you you also have some CDs that are out. Can you tell me what the CDs are used and where those can be purchased?
Well, the CDs can be purchased through Cloudland Productions, and that's in, I think, it's in Tennessee in the Chattanooga area, I don't, but it is the address is on my website. Turn to my website. This is my main website. It tells all about me and my work. And look for up the CDs. There are 7 CDs that are available. And they can be ordered in that way. You don't order them from me, but from Cloudland Productions. So, yes, these are very good CDs. They get into my teachings and how I got into all of this.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I guess one of the questions I have for you is that I know you've had a lot of people apprentice under you as you've taught over the years. If you were to say there was a common aha moment for some of those people who've learned under you, what would you say that was?
I would say, it's like, yes, I can do this too. It's like, yes, I've always known that these things were possible, but not on the conscious level. It just feels like who I truly am. There's the aha of, oh my God, I am so much more than what I've been told. And it's a very freeing thing to know that you have these abilities, that you are so much more than what you've been told by the culture. And our views were formulated from the first time adults began speaking to us when we were toddlers. It wasn't their fault. It wasn't the fault of our teachers and parents and rabbi and priests. And they didn't know any better. They were told, given the same misinformation. But there is a certain inner recognition. And they were told the same lies, you might say. And so part of what I'm doing is trying to move people past the lies into what is truly authentic about ourselves.
That's excellent. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Sure, Mark.
I'm going to turn it back over to Pam because I know we have a couple different topics from the radio show we want to make sure we cover.
Okay.
What I want to talk to you about, Peter, is the shift from mind to heart. And that's something that was in the little blurb that you sent us on Talking Points. And it's something that stuck with me because I think it's such a powerful shift. And I want to get your take on it and maybe an exercise or a tip or something that you could share with our audience that could help them make that shift as well.
Sure, Pam. This is the bottom line. You know, if we can't do that, you know, we can't do these other things. But if we realize that the mind is an artificial creation, it's something that we created very late in our evolution, and it served a purpose. It enabled us to become aware, to develop, you might say, the rational mind and a certain individualization. And we chose this to create this analytical mind. For example, an animal doesn't have the same kind of intelligence, but an animal is intelligent, but theirs is more through awareness. And that's more of a feeling, knowing nature. So we created this, the mind, as a result, it was an artificial self that emerged. And we began to believe that the mind was the self. The self, that's S-E-L-F, the center of our being. And the mind began to feel it was the center of our being. And we lost that feeling, intuitive nature. It was really a collective tragedy in our species because we became separated. You see, the mind has to perceive things at a distance. It has to separate itself to feel its relationship to life around it. But what we lost was the unity consciousness, that we are truly and essentially one with everything out there, and there's no separation. We lost that oneness. It was never intended to be that way. We intended to remember that we essentially were beings who had a healing, who had a feeling nature. And so when that happened, we knew separation for the first time. And we felt separated from God, from the earth, from animals and nature, and from ourselves and our fellow human beings. And so this is the time in which we have to move from that consciousness of separation and into a unity consciousness, to know that we are a part of all things. We are a part of this oneness. This is symbolized by the banishment from the Garden of Eden. Think about this: when in the parable of the Garden of Eden, man and woman walked and talked with God. They walked and talked with the animals. They were at one with all life. And when they ate of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, this is meant to be when we became developed the knowledge of the thinking function. We forgot who we truly were, and the banishment was really our exile from the oneness. And what we are seeking now is to come back into that oneness.
That's beautiful.
A formula, you said, put your hand over your heart and try to feel that heart function, and then come out of that. What is it that you feel towards somebody, let's say a member of your family, or toward one of your animal companions that lives with you, or the flowers in your garden? That is how we are meant to relate, is through that feeling nature, rather than objectifying it through the conscious mind. So I hope that helps. Because it's hard to answer.
It does.
Good.
Now, following that same thinking process, I want to talk about command over the elements of earth, air, fire, and water. You've mentioned that several times in different stories that you've told us about spontaneous combustion of fire, about how Astrid, your wife, could control the elements in terms of wind and water. And those are miraculous stories. But what, and I've had experiences like that myself. And what I've felt in those type of experiences is that once you move from the mind to the heart, you begin feeling what that fire feels like. You begin
Absolutely.
Feeling what that wind feels like.
Oh, yeah.
And it's actually taking the separation out between you. Like what you just said about the mind, that's fascinating to me. Because the mind objectifies things, it makes a separation. Where the heart connects you, where you become one again. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. I think that you really have it down, Pam. Pam, you ought to be teaching this.
I am already teaching it. But I speak to so few people that really have an understanding that true power is integration with your environment, with your life.
Is the integration. This is what we teach in our 3 and 4 day residentials in Sedona. We have 2 of these coming up in June, and we teach people to make that connection with the heart, and the heart being the center of our being, and to learn how to move out of that rather than the conscious mind that separates itself. It's time to stop playing the game of separation and move into the unity consciousness. We cannot experience joy, for example, except when we are connected with our heart. We can experience happiness, which is what you feel when some good things happen to you, but joy is that emotion that we experience that is regardless of what's happening to us. We feel that we are the essence of joy. And a warning about the mind, we find that many people that talk about the heart this and the heart that, we find that they're in their head talking about being in the heart. And so we have to, go back and say, are we truly in our feeling nature? Are we truly in our heart? And not just in our head, thinking that we are in our heart.
And so what would you suggest to our audience to be able to tell the difference?
In the back of the book, Life Without Limits, I have about 30 pages of self-help. How to do this, how we can become one again with the creation and life around us. And I would suggest that that's a good place to start.
That's lovely. Now, you mentioned a couple different types, actually very different types of sources for your teaching, like the shamanic, Native American, Indian, and the Vedic scriptures, which are Hindu or Eastern Indian. And I'd like to know, the siddhis that you're talking about earlier. I'd like to know if you can tie correlations between those two very earthy kinds of belief systems.
Between which are between the Native American and what?
The Vedic scriptures, like the siddhis or the Hindus.
Well, the Native American, they don't have the problem of being in their heads. They grew up in a culture. I'm not talking about our deculturized Native Americans today, but those that have kept true to their earth path, they still feel that heart connection. I've known some the heart connection with all life around them. And they go into the woods and the fields, and they're able to talk to the animals and the plants and feel that closeness and that oneness. The Vedic also has held on to the idea that we are in a state of unity with all life, and that separation is an illusion. And so these are the things that I think are so important here. They both, in their own way, have, to some extent, not lost the path, except those who have been deculturized. And so we have learned, much to learn from both systems. You can make a deal with animals, for example. A native shaman told me how to do this. And I had one time, when I just met my wife Astrid, she had bees that had built hives in the doors of her home and in the eaves, and her 6-year-old boy was terrified of them. They were getting in the house, and she knew I could do this, so she asked if I could get them to leave. I went and talked to them, and I said, you know, this is not where you belong, and to go somewhere else. I gave them a safe place to go to, and you won't be bothered. And an hour later, there were two separate species of bees. That one was the yellow jackets, and the other were the ones that eat the wood. I can't remember what they're called in your home, and are very destructive. And they were gone and never came back. That's how easy it is. I've done this and had my apprentices do this with animals that were making a nuisance of themselves, like coyotes that were killing their cats and dogs, and you can make a deal with them, they can understand your complex concepts. It's hard for people to believe this, and they all communicate telepathically. They get that long distance. And I remember when Astrid and I first moved into a country home on some land, we were renting a house, and there was a family of deer that grazed across the meadow. They were out of hearing distance, but we got attached to them, and then we knew that hunting season was beginning the next day, and we knew that the owner allowed hunting on the property. This is one of the stories in my first book, Soul on Fire. And so we talked to them. We went out on the porch of our home and talked to them. And we knew they couldn't hear us verbally, but told them that it would be dangerous because hunting season was beginning the next day, but it would be okay for them to graze around our home and until hunting season was over. And so what happened is that night, which was about 5 hours later, we had a friend over for company, and we heard this strange bleeding sound. We went out, and that's bleeding, not bleeding. And there were the three deer. And one of them, two of them were grazing. One of them had her neck stretched out toward our door. They were right at the steps of the porch. And it was as if she was saying, "You called us? Well, we're here." And they got the message. They grazed around the house until hunting season ended. Several other deer joined them. The word got out. And then when it was over, the very next day after hunting season ended, they were back at their former habitats. So that's how easy it is to communicate with these animals. I've always been able to walk into a family of deer, a family of bighorn sheep. That's in the first book. My wife Astrid, and I've seen this several times, is that deer just come out of the woods when we were camping or hiking, and come up to her and drop to their knees 10 feet away, gazing at her as if, you know, the desire was to be with her. I've seen a dove, a wild dove, fly out of the woods and start pecking at her shoelaces and end up trying to nest in her hair. This is what happens when you move from there to the heart feeling, and it's such a joyous, ecstatic way to be. I just am so anxious, both of us, to be able to share this with as many people as we can.
That's lovely. One of the things that you mentioned in the papers that you sent Mark and I was, we were talking, you might have answered this already, so tell me if you have.
Okay.
But it says, one of the most important things we need to do to survive in this lifetime, and it's such a compelling statement that that I thought I would just ask the question. What is the one most important thing?
I would say the most important thing is to reconnect with our Earth and recognize that our Earth is not some cold piece of clay floating around in space, but that the Earth that we live on is the manifestation of the physical body of a sacred being, of a great feminine deity that is responsible for what we have and are, and that is that recognition. And if we know that we are, that our Earth is the manifestation of this sacred being, then we will begin to treat her with a lot more respect, to treat her with great thanksgiving and appreciation for all that she's given us, and to know that this is not some piece of clay or rock floating around in space, but that it is here for us to experience and to evolve and to enter into this ecstatic union with all life around us. So it's important to be ever grateful for what our Earth has given us, and to stop using her and treating the Earth as if she was something to be used. We try to see her then as a magical being, a being that's capable of immense love and loves each one of us, knows each one of us as a mother would know their child, knows things about us we don't even know ourselves, and yet she totally accepts us. So the love and appreciation for our Earth Mother, our Earth Spirit, is a good place to begin.
Well, that's lovely. Let me ask you one more quick question before we end off, because we're
okay.
Running out of time now.
Sure.
But and this is something that I don't teach in my class. It's sort of my private secret. When I want to generate something special in my life, something that's important to me, I go out in nature, and I feel what the trees feel like, and I live on the lake, so I feel what the lake feels like, and the sky,
yeah.
And the birds, and you put your energy in all of that, and then I use that energy to manifest what it is that I would like. It's almost like I tell the earth, this is what I'd like to happen in my life. And once that message is communicated clearly, I have complete faith that it always happens. Have you ever had an experience like that?
Oh yes. And what I would just do is ask you to do whatever you can to get this message out. You certainly know how to do it. You've obviously got a good track record. Show people how to do this, how they can find their true happiness, and this can change their lives.
Well, you've been so inspiring, Peter. I've got to tell you, I love talking to you tonight, and it's been a wonderful show.
Yeah, it's been great having you on. Just I had a chance to look at your book. Matter of fact, I liked it so much, I actually went out and got 20 copies, and now we're selling it in a local spa in Tampa, Florida now for all the different spiritual people that come in. So just thank you for that, you know.
Well, of course, Mark. It's been a pleasure, and I hope many of our listeners will go out. I promise you, when you read either one of these books, Life Without Limits or Soul on Fire, you won't be the same. You won't be able to look at the earth or an animal or a tree or flower or listen to the winds in the same way. And thank you for the opportunity to get my message out.
Oh, no problem at all. I also want to give a big thank you out to my friend Olivia from the West Coast. It was because of her that she actually she was able to tell me about your work and everything, and she had some great experiences working with you and finding out about you, and she was the one that called me up and said, you know, you have to go talk to this guy, and, you know, that led me to calling you. So just amazing how things work.
It sure is. Well, it's been an honor, and thank you for the opportunity.
All right, well, before we close out the show, I just want to let everybody know you've been listening to Spiritual Connections Radio, and as always, you can find out more about us on the Internet at www.spiritualconnectionsradio.com. We have our show every Thursday night at 9 o'clock with a different guest every week, and we're starting to publish our schedule for the next 3 or 4 months. That'll be going up in the next week or so. And as I had mentioned on the beginning of the show, we are starting to line up more and more people doing their own radio shows. Pam has her show. Pam, you want to tell everybody about your show really quickly?
Sure. I have a show on Monday night called Secrets of the Soul. It's Monday night at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. And it is basically communicating empowerment. It's talking about the power of the soul. And call-ins are welcome. We talk to you about different questions you have, even readings that you'd like, things that you'd like to know about. And really, exactly what Peter was talking about, on bringing your mind down to your heart and reconnecting with your life. And so that's what the show is about. One of the things I want to remind you about, Mark, is I'd like Peter to be able to give out his website one more time before we go.
Okay, go ahead, Peter.
www.petercalhoun.com.
All right, we're going to close out with our closing song in a minute, but before I do that, I want to say thank you, Pam, for being on and co-hosting the show, and of course, Peter, thanks a lot for your time. It's just amazing and a great honor to have you on the show.
Thank you so much.
Bye. Absolutely.
All right. Peter, just one closing message before we go. What is the message you'd like to give to everybody as we close out the show?
I would say the most important thing to all of you listeners is to thine own self be true.
I like that. Lovely. I like that a lot. All right. So you guys have a great night. Thank you, everybody. You've been listening to Spiritual Connections Radio.
Good night.
Life is but a dream.